This week's Breadwinners podcast is brought to you by the smartmoneyseries.com, and on July 7th, Ed and his team have a special webinar with Paddy Delaney from Ireland's number one personal finance blog and podcast. You can hear about buying back your property through your pension on the webinar. Just send me your email address for this free subscription. Just DM me at the Breadwinners Facebook page.
And you're very welcome to the podcast this evening. I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the podcast by Shawnee Myler from Myler Performance. Shawnee, how are you this evening? And thanks for taking your taking time out of your busy schedule to speak to us on the Breadwinners podcast. I suppose it's a friendly chat between a Donegal and a Tyrone man, first of all.
Yeah. No, thanks very much, Parik, for the invite to come along. I'm very privileged to get the opportunity as well. And obviously, I get a good bit of work from Donegal people, so I can't say a word. I keep my mouth shut, so to, like, you know.
Well, the podcast has been downloaded in Russia, so we could find you over there as well. So you never know.
Siberia, you probably send me off to Siberia as you will.
So, Shawnee, I suppose people that wouldn't know Myler Performance, tell us exactly what you do, and first of all, who you are, of course, and what you do. I suppose we'll touch on your business first of all, Shawnee.
Yeah. Well, I suppose Myler Performance, I suppose the clue is in the name. It's about performance, and it's really about people, helping people fulfill their full potential. And get to where they would like to get to. And you really take people from where they are now to where they want to get to. And that's just a journey. There'd be hurdles there. And you find that the majority of hurdles with people, Parik, usually tend to be in their head, usually probably limiting beliefs that are there for a while. So I just try to help them break those things down into small pieces, try and look at them to see, are they actually facts? Are they real? Which you find out in a lot of cases they're not, and move them away so that the people can actually probably, you know, get to a life and get to places where they really wanted to get to. So in short, really, it's performance improvement and fulfilling your potential. That's what it's about, like.
And suppose we're going to bring you back on something just lately that you've done. Suppose during this time of recording, COVID-19, we're just coming out the other side of it, things are starting to open up once again. But you have an interesting story. During your time off, you decided to do a bit of a marathon and a bit of a challenge for yourself as well. Maybe tell us about that first of all.
My wife Paula is a nurse in Oma, and she got seconded up to Enniskillen to work in the intensive care COVID-19 ward unit. So I was sitting out the back one day and I read the article about Cal Freeman from Mayo, the Mayo hurler who was running a marathon in his back garden, and I just looked across the shed there and just said on the 3rd April that, said to the kids, you know what kids, I'm going to run a marathon in that shed in 11 days time. And I hadn't been doing much running because I had a bit of a health scare at Christmas time, you know, just on unexpected. I had a couple of blood clots in my lung, which I didn't expect was going to happen, but they did happen, and then I had to take a rest. So, but it was all clear to go and done a bit of training in February and go back and run. The most I'd done was 10 mile. But, Eric, as I said there, you know, it's amazing what the body can do when the mind can set the goal out. Like, I was able to set the goal. I had a purpose. I had things up on the wall. The kids had put stuff on things up on the wall whenever I was getting it tight. I was always going to do it. I just had to drop my pace down a bit. But there was no doubt I was going to do that because of the purpose and the cause it was for. So very lucky that I set a target of £4,000 and I ended up raising £29,008.58, which was just huge to the people for supporting it.
And Your story is quite unique because, okay, all right, you've done a bit of running in your time, Shawnee. But take me back to that scenario when you made the decision of going for your unexpected results that you were to get back at Christmas time. Take me back to that time, because it kind of leads well into your story. It was probably a difficult time for you then, unannounced to yourself.
I'd started back running late last year, doing a bit, and I went to the gym to do some work, and I'd done maybe too much on my legs, and I hurt my calf, and I'd an awful tense in the calf, but I didn't really know what it was, so just I didn't go to physio, it just says I'll take a rest. But what turned out, it got developed in my calf and moved up my body and ended up in my lung, and it was only whenever I was driving to Dublin on the 4th of December that I got severe pain in my side and my chest and my shoulder. And I turned in Monaghan and drove back and went to the cardiac unit. Now, they weren't expecting anything to happen. They just checked my heart and they thought everything was okay. But luckily, they checked my lung as well and came back about 4 o'clock in the afternoon to let me know that I had actually 2 blood clots in my lung. So it was, for someone who keeps himself well and to keep myself in good shape, it was unexpected. But it just shows that things can happen. You know, you don't know what's going on inside. And I was just very lucky because that clot could have moved. It could have moved anywhere in my body. So I'm just grateful and thankful that I was diagnosed and got the proper medication then. So everything okay now.
And Johnny, during that period, obviously your resilience, you played football at a high level, you played for Tyrone, and obviously that kicked in as well whenever you got that kind of news. The resilience, is that a factor you see within a lot of business people?
Suppose I've probably developed a more resilient mindset probably in the last 7 years. I probably when I look back in your football career, that I didn't achieve as much as I should have. I was just late for, I made the panel in 1986. I played my debut, it was the very first game after Tyrone. I'd lost all Ireland final. I was only 20, so I ended up on played to 27, and I just missed the 95 team, you know, and that was down to myself because I never put enough work. I put work early in the years, but I never done enough work to stay on the panel, and I was obviously frustrated I didn't make that team, but that was down to myself. It's really probably 7 years ago whenever I went through redundancy and came out at 47 after with a good job and big salary. You know, what was I going to do? But I suppose it's like anything in life. You know, you have a choice. Everybody has a choice. Do I play the victim and give off at this, or do I take a look at the skill set I have and the strengths I have and put them into a different way? And that's just what I done. I just looked at different things, looked at opportunities, and very lucky to have worked for John Conway, the Meteor, who was a sponsor of the Donegal Rally, and got working with him. And after that, set up my own business a couple of years ago. And I've been very fortunate with the companies I'm working with and the associates I'm working with and the opportunities I've had to work in an area which I love doing. So I say probably that resilience came more so probably in the last 7 years when you started to do my coaching, going to Dublin to do my coaching diplomas, started reading a lot of books, started really getting into learning, having this growth mindset, that to think that I went for 47 years of my life and really didn't do that. It's amazing whenever you make that wee flip in the brain, just to flip over to the side. And I reckon that I probably am not going to have enough years to read all the books I want to read. There's that many. Well, previously I would have wrote, my personal development was very poor. I didn't grow myself. I didn't learn. I didn't take risks. But it's amazing whenever you make that mindset shift, what you can achieve and how much you can improve your life.
Talk to me about that mind shift, Shawnee. Take me back to that time, 7 odd years ago, you got the news, you got the phone call. How long did you decide to yourself that you're going to sit and feel sorry for yourself?
I suppose there was an element of, lucky enough, I got a few pound out of it. I knew you had about 6 months to sort of weigh things up. But when you're 2 months later, when you're sitting drinking coffee, and you start, when you have no sense of purpose, because you have nothing to get up for, it's a realization, you're sort of going like, you know, I have a lot of things to happen here. I've got 3 kids, young kids, to try and get through college. And, you know, I've got a mortgage to pay and stuff like that. So it is just then sort of being proactive, you know, and having that thing of what am I good at? And I was very lucky that the company gave me a career coach. And he was brilliant because he sat down with me and he started looking at what do I do well? What are my strengths? What are my skills? What are my abilities? What have I achieved? And see, when people don't do enough of that to bring that to the forefront of our mind, we look too much at what we can't do than on what we can do. And he sort of created that environment for me to sort of look at all the things, and that probably brought back a lot of confidence, because what it did first, it showed that I had competence, and that competence then led to confidence. So that then I was able to take these steps to set up my own business. I'd done it for about a year. It didn't work out great. I didn't do enough selling, and I got some good contracts. Then I was very lucky to get in with John as a sales manager and work with him and learn a lot about small businesses. So I did, very, very lucky to get that opportunity. And then I was able to take that learning and the 25 years working in the corporate world with John Player and with Diageo, and then the 2.5 years of working in the small business world, and one was able to complement each other. And then I was able to, almost 3 years ago, set up my own business as a with the experience that I had.
That takes me to the next question. And suppose the 25 years experience that you have had with some very, very big companies, have you got more sense of fulfillment now than what you had back in those corporate days? Doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, I suppose there is an element of that when you're working for yourself. I suppose when you're working for yourself, you're achieving your own goals. When you're working for somebody else, you're out looking to achieve their goals. So that's the big thing in the change of the goals. When you work for a company, it's basically they tell you what has to be done and you work for their goals. When you're working for yourself, you're setting a lot of your own goals. So that is a big, big thing. So it is from working on that there. And so you've got that element of independence as well, which is good to make up your mind. But I suppose at the same time, you have to be getting business too. So you have to push yourself and stretch yourself and take yourself out of your comfort zone and go to places where you might think that maybe, I'm only a wee small one-man band. I'll never get a contract there, or I'll never get doing that. But, I've been fortunate to meet people in Dublin, been down doing mindset talks to the Department of Health in Dublin. I've been very fortunate to be working with engineering companies that are doing 60 million. I've been very fortunate to be coaching chief executives. So again, having that self-confidence, the self-belief in yourself that you're good at your job and you can do it without being arrogant, and thinking you're too good or above. But I think maybe more people need to sort of believe a wee bit more in themselves. Is a thing that, and I really try my best to help people as well to try and look at that side on the left side where they have so much, and to try and believe a wee bit more.
And suppose, Shani, when you mentioned about what your skills were, what you can do, and when you looked at, you've positioned yourself very much in the sales environment, and is that where you see a lot more potential? Shifting a company's potential from someone's mindset, once you shift that particular element of it, the company's, bottom line shifts as well.
Yeah, I suppose I would be very much, I'd be very much on the people, working on the person, the personal development, working on the person's skills as a salesperson, not just a salesperson, very lucky to widen it out and work on it, but it's about that competence of working with a person and seeing what are they doing well, what could they develop, and how could they get better, and challenging them to take that extra step. It could be in their planning, it could be in how they ask questions, it could be in how they listen, it could be in opening the sale, it could be in closing the sale. But I just think there's huge opportunities and there's huge sort of development areas there, because some people think because they're selling for 20 years that they're great salespeople. They may be okay, but people fall into bad habits, and then those habits sort of control them. So that's why I feel this whole sales coaching thing is a big, big area where, whenever you walk the floor, years ago when they used to, I don't remember talking retail, you used to walk the floor and watch what's happening, and people do it in businesses. But, going out with people and seeing how they operate in calls and stuff like that there, and just an extra set of eyes is very, very good for people in sales, so that they can actually see the development areas. So maybe probably not enough of that's done as well.
So take me back to your story once again, getting into Mailer Performance and getting the first couple of clients and trying to to maneuver your way through that. Just give us, you've given us a little bit of a touch of who you work with, but you've worked with some really interesting companies over the last number of years as well at a very high level, and differences from high level companies to one man bands. Suppose, where do you see the differences and how do you improve them?
Well, there's probably not massive differences because it's about the person. Again, it's all about the person. You could be a sales director of a company and turn 50 or 60 million, but you could have still the same limiting beliefs. You could have still the same challenges as regards the growth. You could have still the same lack of confidence issues. You could have still the same relationship issues with people in your team. No matter if you're a small business owner with three or four people working for you and turning over 1 million, than the other one, it's very much about the person. And I just find that there's a big crossover with regards to the person themselves and trying to get them to break down the small things that stop on them. So I don't really see a massive difference. You could be a chief executive running a business. But again, in a lot of cases, Parik, it is about people. You know, there's two things you look at. There's the task and the people. And a lot of people are very good at the task. And during COVID there, whenever COVID happened, what you found was, and just talking to some HR managers, companies were very good at the technical stuff. They were very good at working out the furlough. They were very good at getting people set up to work from home. They were very good at maybe organising the Zooms. But they struggled at the emotional side, at understanding the people, and people having to work from home, and people having kids there, and then having to homeschool, and people missing their colleagues. So, you know, you do really need to understand both. So you do, as regards to get a good performance out of people. And I think that showed managing people's emotions at the moment, because there's so much there that we're so much uncertainty, and we've lost so much control. So being able to manage that emotional side is quite a difficult area. But I just think that companies need to do a wee bit more on that side, and not just focus on all the technical side.
It comes back to an old GA quote, suppose, is either armour on the shoulder or slap on the back of the head or whatever, you know. So identifying that, so any business owner that's listening to Shawnee, identifying that can be sometimes, it can be really tricky.
Yeah, it can be tricky. But the one skill is probably the skill that I've learned the most and worked the hardest on the last 3 or 4 years is listening. The skill of listening. You know, it's a massive, massive skill. And what's happened is you find most people listen to reply, but they don't listen to understand. So they don't stay long enough in the conversation to stay curious enough in the conversation to ask another question and ask another question and stay quiet. They just want to get in and give their side of the story. So listening, because a lot of people out there just want to be listened to. They want the story to be heard, but people aren't prepared to give them that. Like, and it's amazing what you can get out of somebody if they just say, he actually listened to me. He might not be able to do an awful lot, but he actually listened to my point. So that skill of staying in the conversation long enough, staying more curious, asking another question, and how can I help you? And where else can I help you? And how long will that take? You know, and what's that going to cost? You know, and what's happening over here? Just that skill of listening to your people, I just think it's a huge, and if you're sort of managers or owners of businesses, to get to know your people a bit better, just as we say, with 2 ears and one mouth for a reason. So we have. So.
And one ear for letting it in and another ear for letting it out. Yeah, that's one my granny used to have. Now, there's one quote that you sent to me that you suppose it kind of sums up a wee bit. Stop thinking what other people think about you because they're not looking. And is that something you see quite a lot? People maybe sitting back in their shell and not really hitting their own targets because they're just not pushing themselves enough. And spotting those gaps is obviously the job of a manager or a boss, but it's also the responsibility of the individual to show a little bit of that quality as well. Is that something you see a lot of, Sean?
Well, suppose that thing of, like, you know, what people think of you is is none of your business. You know, people need to understand that, you know, you have to take accountability. There's two words that people maybe don't take on themselves in work is accountability and responsibility. You have an accountability for your own personal development. You can't rely on companies to be going and developing you all the time. They can provide some level of help as regards some courses and skill development. But you know, you're in charge of your own personal development. So you need to be knocking the door. You need to be asking, you know, is there a course here I could do to help my skill in this area? Is there a course here I can do? And, you know, for example, an interpersonal management, people who struggle with communication, people who struggle with building rapport with other people. You know, is there a course I can work on maybe in problem solving or decision making, which is to do with yourself and your own ways of thinking? But that has to come from the bottom up, as you were alluding to. So sometimes people don't get promotions because they say, right, well, you know, I've been working here for 15 years and that boy's only working 10 years. I should get their promotion before him. But that's not always the case. Because what got you here won't get you there. Just because you're there working in a job doesn't give you the right to get the management job or the key account manager or the supervisor job, because the skill set you have was necessary for that job. But the skill set for the next job is completely different. Plus, the outputs that you have to deliver are also completely different. So unless you have the competence to go in there, you're going to struggle. And when you're struggling and you're not competent, you'll lose your confidence. And then you'll be right back down. And then you'll put your hand up and say, oh, I don't want to take on this management job anymore. So I think people need to be a bit more proactive themselves. With businesses or whatever, or even business owners themselves have been proactive to what are the things I need to do more of? What are the things I need to do less of? What's the one behavior change I need to do to get better? What's the one skill I need to do to add to my repertoire? So that's what I'm thinking always a lot of people developing themselves and developing themselves, because you'll never, ever, ever outgrow your personal development. Never. You know, you'll always do it. It'll always be useful somewhere. So it will.
It's interesting you say that, and suppose everything's brought back to a financial aspect, and you only can grow as your income as much as you do. I think that's the terminology that you're hunting at there.
Aye, well, I mean, it all depends too. Is it income you want, or is it satisfaction? Is it a level of happiness that you're doing what you want to do? As well, it was a job satisfaction. How much of it's the sort of the financial side of the extra money, and how much of it's the job satisfaction. You're actually doing something that you're A, good at, and that the B, that you love doing, and it's three, it's got a great sense of purpose. If you can click those three boxes, I tell you what, you're doing well, like you are. So you're using your strengths, you know, because we talk a lot about strengths. I mean, and I was very lucky whenever that coach worked with me, he worked a lot on my strengths, not my weaknesses. People probably spend too much time on the weaknesses. I give you an example. You, for example, take Dean Rock there, who plays for Dublin, right? And Dean Rock is a fantastic free take kicker, right? But Dean Rock, if you watch him, never kicks the ball with his left foot, okay? So if he's going to train and spend an extra half hour training, is he going to spend an extra half hour getting his percentage of free kicks from 90% to 95%? Or is he going to spend extra half hours working at kicking the ball with his left foot? What's he going to do? All day long, he'll work at the free kicks because that's his strength. He likes doing it. He's good at it, but he wants to get even better. The opportunities to kick the ball with left foot are limited, and he can always move around and fist it off or so whatever. So that whole thing about what are you really good at, if you can move that up to another level in whatever work you do or every sport you do, take it on to another level, that sometimes you may not need to be spend hours and hours on your weakness to get a 1% or 2% increase. Maybe you just lift the phone and phone a mate who's very good at it, and they can do it in no time. Like. So that's the big thing about strengths.
Is that something you see, Johnny, as well? Is probably people maybe complicating things, and when you could ring someone and say, how did you manage to do that? It can be very daunting in business to try and do that, but it's definitely advisable.
Yeah, well, that's probably the ego. That's the ego that doesn't allow people. Sometimes the ego and their identity doesn't allow them to sort of ask for help. So they would rather maybe do it themselves and do it bad than put their hands up and say, I'm actually not good at that. Like, for example, me, I work as a small business, right? But, you know, I'm not very good at finances. So at the end of the day, I'm not going to sit in my room four nights a week trying to work out finances. I just get an accountant, just sort that out and just pay them. You know, because there's other people maybe who might decide, I'm not going to spend money on an accountant to save money. But they might spend five evenings a week or three evenings a week of their time where they could be out with their family or going to football or going running. So I just really say, I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. So therefore, I can bring a specialist in. So maybe this businessman too, from that point of view, could look at what they're really good at. And if they're not very good at something, you know, just pick your hands up. And you don't have to spend all the hours all the time. Get somebody else in. And maybe you might have to pay them a small fee.
Growing up, Shawnee, obviously, you found your niche, you found your passion. Yeah. Talk to us about growing up, Shawnee. What was the plan? What were you looking for then? And take me back, how did you get into sales, first of all? What moved you in?
Strange way. Like, you know, I suppose growing up, I was lucky. A house of four boys here in Oma. Very lucky. Good parents, mum and dad. Dad was a runner. He took the athletics, the local running club here. And we were very lucky. We got into Evering. We were members of the tennis club. And you know, we done Irish dancing. And we played football to myself, my brothers. Football for St. Enda's. Two of my brothers played hurling as well. My mum was in, she played in Camogie back in the 60s, like, you know, too, and say, obviously, dad was a runner, so they were very lucky with a sports environment. Brothers played a bit of music. My granddad was the conductor of the orchestra and stuff like that. I tried it, but I wasn't very good at it, like, so it wasn't. So we were very lucky that it brought up well, and just obviously through the 70s, and the 70s, obviously, the troubles were all there, but, you know, you just kept your head down and done with you. We're lucky we got through all those there, and there's some people that you knew well who maybe were pulled away to the other side and got caught in. So I ended up going to college and doing Jordanstown and doing history and politics. I wanted to be a PE teacher, as most people back then, but I didn't get the grade, so I went and done history and politics and had a dust about Jordanstown for a few years. But I was very lucky to land there at the same time as all Ireland captains like DJ Keane and Enda Gormley and DJ Barry Breen and Dermot McNichol and Colin Harney. We were lucky. We won two Sigerson Cup medals, two Ryan Cup medals, twice picked for combined universities, and won an All Ireland Freshers. So to come out with five All Ireland medals at college I was very, very lucky. I landed there at the time where there was some fantastic players. And when I came out of that, I got on a wee program, and they were getting seconded to companies, and I was very lucky. I got into Guinness to do a sort of trainee role, and got to know the people, and there was a job coming up, and I was very lucky that I got in there as sort of the relief rep. So, and then got my own patch around throwing for mana after that. So that started me in sales back then in my early 20s. Like.
And the progression of that, Johnny, I suppose there was a boss man in the office seeing that you had something a wee bit different about you. Tell me, what was that?
I'm not sure. I suppose I'm maybe strong at connecting with people, good at sort of building relationships with people, maybe come across as genuine, that initial thing in sales. I'd be pretty good at opening doors. We're very lucky that you have big brands with Guinness and stuff like that. I then moved then obviously to work with Imperial Tobacco, which is John Player, and started off as a sales rep, and then I left, and then moved up to be the account manager looking after Musgrave and Spar and Dunn's and all. And then I left that, moved up to the sales manager running Northern Ireland. You know, you had nine people. So that was a whole new ball game because you had to deliver through people. So obviously I'd be very competitive right through my life. So I had to realize then to that whole new skill set, that it wasn't about me going out to deliver in the 1,200 shops. It was my team. So you have to change your whole way of working and try and deliver through team and bring the people along with you, because it's not me that's going to be doing it. So that was a challenge at the start for the first year or two. And then you got into coaching. We're very lucky. The company were very good at, you know, training and development. And that's where you learned an awful lot with how to sort of get the best out of people.
And that journey obviously got you to ask yourself a couple of questions. those questions along the way. Give me a couple of those. What were they?
Not sure, but suppose then you were just working. I mean, you were probably just working because you had a young family, two young kids, and it was about work, and it's about you didn't do an awful lot of sport yourself, really. Back then, you were just working. I think you were caught up in that whole thing of just working, Park, like, you know, working and working for the family, and you weren't really thinking really anything else. I wasn't, like, until sort of then you hit that thing at 47, whenever you hit that thing of, like, right, well, the whole sales force was cut in half because of circumstances, and you find yourself out. And I thought I would have been good on until I'm 60 in that company. But that didn't happen. So you had to reassess and take a look at yourself. And that was then when the personal development started. So it was.
Did you feel guilty at that time, Shami? Did you feel guilty that maybe I didn't see this coming, or I didn't develop myself enough over the years, or was there any other questions that you were asking yourself at that stage?
I did feel a wee bit like, you know, that I didn't develop myself because I was just doing the job, and you felt as though that this is a job for life and it's well paid and I'm getting well looked after. And I just didn't go into the personal development thing. I just done my job. And now when you look back on, you probably could have pushed yourself a wee bit more, and there might have been a couple of opportunities too for maybe other jobs and be across the water, a couple of promotion things, but you never bothered going for them. And maybe they were there, but maybe that was me wanting to be, I suppose I'm a local, but I maybe didn't want to go over there. Maybe my family values didn't want me sort of moving the family over there, or didn't want me looking for promotion. So I just, so I'll just stay here in Northern Ireland. But I think that point's very valid, that, but you just sat and you sort of found yourself drifting a wee bit in your sort of 40s and not developing yourself and pushing yourself on. Yeah, no, I think that would be true. Like,
and is that something you see businesses now do? Business people, businessmen, either entrepreneurs or self-employed or even employed, just getting into that comfortable position and maybe not taking their head above the parapet, just to stop and maybe see a couple of years down the road. Is that something you find that a lot of people have, as they say in horse racing, the blinkers on?
I suppose some people do have blinkers on. I find probably the biggest thing that I work with in coaching, the biggest thing is self-awareness. Some people just do not see the wood for the trees. Like, and it's not that they're bad or they're wrong. They just have a lack of self-awareness. They have a tunnel vision on, and it's only when you ask them a few questions and go deeper and start pulling back, it's just like the onion and pulling back a few layers, that the light bulb sometimes goes off in a few people to say, you know what, I have, that's been sitting in front of me and I haven't been seeing it. It's not that they're no bad people. These are hard workers. They're good people. It's just sometimes the lack of self-awareness that maybe everybody else is seeing it except them. And that's usually the moment where people then start to be able to grow. They can start saying, right, I'm now going to take action. I'm now going to take steps and go in this direction. But the biggest thing of them all is actually that self-awareness. Whenever that happens, the light bulb goes off and then you go, that's the eureka moment.
Yeah. Touching on that action, what can it be? I suppose, Shai, it's different for everybody, but, you know, just the general aspects that people can tap into.
Well, stop talking and do things. Like, you know, I sat in that house there. I sat there and I looked across that shed and I said, 11 days time, I'm going to run a marathon in that shed. Like, now, logically, that wasn't right because I had no training done. Like, and the fact that a treadmill in a shed isn't the ideal thing to run. But, you know, you have to just get yourself up and do. The word do. People do a lot of talk. Intentions are no good. You know, people have the best of intentions, telling you what they're going to do and all that there. Intentions mean nothing without action. It's about taking that first step. And we talk about things like how to eat an elephant. Small chunks. Start with the small first step, like, you know, and then you'll find take another step. And a month later, you'll find you've taken about 20 steps. Like, so the whole thing is about action and taking. And as you go on that journey, it's amazing. The wee things, the doors are open. It's amazing. You find out, you meet that fella. Then he tells you about Asphalt, and all of a sudden the progress is made. But the thing is about is this: less talking and more action is really, really key to things.
And suppose that's an aspect we'll touch on is social media. It builds up a lot of things that, you know, are all good, too good to be true, maybe at times. And do you find that as well a factor, maybe that you know, people don't want to put in the hard work? They watch a video or two and they don't do much else.
I'm probably going to find as much. I mean, I don't, suppose, because I'm not on social media myself. The only thing I do is on LinkedIn, like, you know, and I don't be on Instagram or Twitter or, you know, I've got a small business Facebook page, but I don't be on it much. But so I don't really know or understand. Maybe there is a society thing there, you know, where people like to be seen more, but they lack the hard work underneath it. But I wouldn't really know too much, you know, in that area, like, to really sort of speak much about it, like.
Obviously, there's different factors to it, and in a business context, sometimes it might not be as relevant. But as society progresses, it's definitely having its place more and more. But coming back to, I suppose you tapped on a couple of stories and around the football and how that inspired you, and you never really went over that at all. We didn't really touch on that, the resilience. That I know there's a lot of them, Tyrone, and you just kind of, you went over it very, very quickly, but talk to us about your values, your community, and, you know, just through the interview, going over some of the topics that you touched on, your values, not going away. How big has that been in your life, on your decision-making?
Values would play a big part. You know, then people probably don't look enough at their values either, you know, deep down. And maybe this time of reflection where people have been off work, they can take a look at what is important in life. You know, is it always about chasing that extra dollar? You know, is it putting your health at risk? And maybe people might take a step back and say, well, maybe we mightn't take two holidays next year, maybe take one. Do we really need the top of the range car at 40,000? You know, maybe we could do one with 20 or 25. I don't know. But, I mean, it's the, you know, maybe spend time with your kids is quality time. Maybe sitting in front of the, you know, the TV with your kids or playing a board game or, you know, out the back playing with them. Maybe these things, some people might see these things as very important. But again, other people might see them as just really, no, to be honest, I'd rather get away and, you know, and work down here or work there or whatever, travel. I don't know. It's whatever suits people. It's not up for me to tell people what to do. Everybody, people have different values, so they are. But your values do make decisions for you. So they do. Your gut will tell you things that people value certain things. And I suppose from my point of view, commitment would be a value. You know, one thing about it'd be really, really important that, you know, that effort and commitment are two big things. You may not get the outcome that you want, whether it's in running or football. But really what I would be asking for is give the effort and give the commitment. You're not in control. In football or run, you're never in control of the outcome. But you are in control of the process. So you have loads of control of all those things. But if you put in the right effort, right commitment, do the right thing, you increase the likelihood of the outcome being right for you. So I would be a big man on process. So I would.
Obviously, we touched on the football aspect of it. And it's levered into the business aspect, the process. And you hear the old saying, it's the process, the process, the process. And if we look at McDonald's or any successful franchise, it comes down to the process there.
Yeah, that's it. Well, they're no different than obviously the outcome. They're not in control of the outcome as regards people coming through the door, but the what they're doing and then their marketing to open doors. You know, what people do then on their customer service when people come through the door and how they're treated. That's what you're in control of. You know, it doesn't cost that much money to smile if a customer came into your shop. It doesn't. It does. So therefore, it doesn't cost that much to say, hey, how can I help you? You know, can I carry that bag out to the car for you? You know, simple things I got there. That's all in your control. So, I think just keep if you keep working at those things there, that's a good step. And there's a lot of people do very, very good at them, and that's probably why they some of the businesses are doing very, very well, because they're good. They perfect those things.
Sorry, we've spoken for nearly 45 minutes or so, and at this stage of the interview, I'm not going to keep you any longer, as they say, but a little bit more about Minor Performance. We'll get the old plugs in there now. Tell us about what you do, because there is a bit of a mixed bag there as well.
I suppose I actually work as a personal development coach for the GPA. So I do. I cover Ulster for them, where I work with the county footballers off the pitch and really helping them taking a look at their person development, what they're looking to do with their careers, where they're looking to go, help them set goals, meaningful goals to take steps, take a look at what they're good at. Some people might have to go back to education to upskill themselves. Some people might want to get promotion in a job that they're in. And sometimes their football can hold them back because you know, they don't have an opportunity, maybe you know the commitments they have. But I think really footballers need to be looking at, you know, a happy footballer at work is a happy footballer on the field. So if they're able to get all that sorted out, that they're content with those sort of things, their finances and their development and their job and stuff like that, they'll perform better on the field. So it's really good that the GPA have got a situation where that the players are given personal development coaches, that and that they're not waiting until they're sort of 33 or 34 and then saying, you know what, I've had 7 years there that I could have been doing something. I could have been doing a wee course and getting a business course and getting a new skill. I could have been doing an extra bit of work here had a mentor or whatever to help me and guide me, and somebody could have been connecting me and do a bit of networking with me or whatever. So I find that's very fulfilling, working with young footballers to help them on their career side. I'm very lucky. I'm working the company that 7 years ago that I work in transitions. They supplied a career coach to me whenever I came out from Imperial Tobacco, who worked with me. And lo and behold, they needed a career coach last year in Northern Ireland because the guy John was giving it up. So I went for an interview and I got the job. So at the moment I was working with last year as a group of 60 people who were made redundant in Northern Ireland throughout different places. I was working with them, you know, helping them with their resilience, looking at their strengths, helping them with CV writing. And I had actually just a boy today actually from London who was an interview tomorrow, and he used to work for one of the big car companies and he was made redundant, and just helping him prepare for tomorrow. So you feel it's really great deep inside to have wore the T-shirt and to have gone through a period of redundancy and to know what it's like to be able to then go back and actually help people so that they can actually just take their next step. So that's I'm very, very fortunate with that there. And I'm very lucky too. Around Donegal last year, actually myself and a colleague, Cathy Kelly Sweeney from Dublin, she now lives in Donegal town, we delivered a coaching diploma for Kingston College in Ballybuffet, and there was 9 people, and Donegal didn't have to go drive off to Dublin last year to do their coaching advanced diploma in personal executive and leadership coaching. And we're very lucky to be able to work for them and deliver that. And you learned an awful lot, you know, from tutoring the diploma, having gone through the diploma, 7 years ago myself, and then to come back and tutor it, that was great too. Great even for them to have faith and somebody like myself and Cathy to deliver that.
And then obviously you have the executive coaching, the sales coaching and the wellbeing coaching, so all bases covered. Shani, before I let you go, how can people get in contact with you? Obviously you mentioned you have a LinkedIn page, and we're hoping to get you onto Facebook as well at some stage. So
very little on that, but normally LinkedIn, if it's Shani Myler as on LinkedIn, and website's MylerPerformance.com, and happy what I do with a lot of people. I have a thing, I give a 30-minute free coaching session to anybody that just wants to sort of just lift the phone and have a chat about themselves, where they're at, where they're looking to go. you know, there's a complimentary 30-minute chemistry session just to see, you know, could we connect? Could we get on with each other? Whenever I ask the questions, does it land with them? Is it for them? It's for some people. It's not. Some people's ready for the change. Some people's not ready. They have to be ready. So happy about this. If anybody wants to give me a phone call, and you know, they get all my details on LinkedIn or my number on the website. Happy to give a free 30-minute coaching session to anybody who wants to take that next step.
Well, look, Shani Meyer, from Meyer Performance, thanks very much for joining us on the Breadwinners podcast. It's been a delightful hour, so thanks for talking to us.
That's all from today's Breadwinners Business Podcast. Many thanks for all the downloads from all over the world this week. We're super happy with that. I hope today's podcast was useful. Please tag me over on our Facebook page. But for myself, Pádraig Kilfley, and the Breadwinner Podcast team, we will talk to you next week.